Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! Now we're in a transition a little bit. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are broadcasting through the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Want to thank them very sincerely. Want to thank Connor O'Donnell. He is our video stream man. He's the guy that gets us on and keeps us on Twitch. And Connor, thank you very much. Thanks for your hard work this weekend. Getting me up and running and hopefully permanently. Wouldn't that be nice? Want to thank everybody for calling and texting and emailing.
Most well, thank you for listening on this Monday.
Yes, really appreciate that. It's a fun show today. Want to thank our executive producer. His name, Dustin William Rhodes.
The Cubs have done absolutely nothing.
And Ray Diaz, Ray, you are a very beloved man. Thank you.
Our offense broke.
And we want to thank Brandon Fryer for getting up with us this morning, and Sean Sears, who also helped out in the studio. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys. We don't know what's wrong with these Cubs.
And what a joy it is now to welcome in our dear, beloved colleagues. It's Stan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi. And guys, good morning. Happy week, and God bless us, everyone.
Hi, Dan and Leila.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, I got this whacked out plan to prevent Wilson Contreras from getting too upset. Maybe just plunk the first guy you face today against the Brewers. Oh, the pitch got out of hand here. I'm sorry. I hit the old gluteus maximus, but guess what? We can move on now. Issue a warning, and then Willie knows people are going to be thrown out if they miss.
I wonder when that becomes strategic, when the book gets out of this guy can get in his head a little bit. You know, you buzz the tower or maybe you graze him kind of thing and starts to be like he's completely off his game and he's going to lose sight of things and lose sight of better judgment maybe. I mean, when does that become an advantage to the opponent that you allow that to affect you so much?
I think they're
that
there.
Book's been released. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's like a bestseller in the National League. You know, since he came up in 2016, that this is a guy that you can rattle and you can get inside his head. And I don't know if it alters his performance in a negative way. It may make him more focused. I don't know. But people understand you can get to this guy.
I think every time there seems to be a game and you see the emotion, that's pretty easy to understand. There's a candidate, as long as nobody gets hurt, for a high and tight fastball, that's for sure. If it works, it works.
I hate to even propose that, but, you know, Contreras is really getting to a point where I don't know what else you're going to do. You can't keep letting him get fined and I can't imagine him not getting fined if he's hit again, especially against the Brewers.
From the Cubs' perspective, too, I think it probably even goes beyond Wilson Contreras. There is that streak against the Brewers. But after Chris Bryant got hit yesterday, I think that was when there was an ejection by Borzello because he was, you know, voicing some frustration. And there's probably more than just Wilson involved, even though he's the guy that seems to be happening to the most. You got Rizzo, who, you know, he gets hit for obvious reasons because of the way that his stance and where he positions himself. But I think the Cubs seem like a team that they're not hitting, and now they're fed up because everybody's hitting them. So that's a bad combination.
Well, if you're the opposing team, and I'm not advocating for anybody to get hit or anything, or even a love tap, as people have suggested. I'm just saying that there are certain pitches that pitchers can throw that'll say, hey, here's my space. And if you know that it's going to affect the other batter to the point where he's thrown off and every run matters, what's preventing you from throwing that then? If you know that you can mess with somebody with there being very little risk and high reward.
I mean, it's a problem. if you don't control this, if you don't look at how often a guy's getting hit, and, you know, you mentioned Chris Bryant. He, like, sprinted to first base. He just, like, he took it, and he didn't seem remotely to be bothered by it. He was like, oh, great, I got a base. And, that's easier said than done. And, you know, what was amazing is you're yelling from the dugout. The umpire, as they said on the broadcast, must know your voice because everybody's got a mask on, right? Why are you son of a – I mean, it's kind of funny that you knew who to throw out in a way. Or you could make the – maybe you need to be able to throw your voice a little bit. Maybe, hold – the guy with the ventriloquist dummy, it was him.
Mortimer Snurd has been ejected. Willie Tyler and Lester have been ejected from the game and suspended. I mean, this is I wonder if other teams are just looking at the Cubs' offenses as head cases in general. Because I don't know what to do now. How many different hitting infrastructures have they gone through? You know, you had your whole John Mailey experience and the Chili Davis experience, and now it's the Anthony Iaposi experience. And they've got Justin Stone with his $1 million force plates and everything as they're hitting. It's over full staffs of people and full laboratories of work. And we're talking about how many of these guys are going to get contract extensions and where they are on all those clocks and what their overall value is. And this has been a complete pain in the ass for the better part of 3 years right now, waiting for this team's offense to wake up and fire on all cylinders.
Because it's the same experience,
yep.
Regardless of the hitting coach, regardless of the chemistry in the front office or in the dugout or the clubhouse, it has been the same experience, a bitter disappointment, and which is what happens when players fail to reach their potential. And you're looking at three of the biggest players. I mean, I think probably Rizzo to the lesser degree of the three, but when you see the drop-offs in Bryant and Baez's production, especially last year, it's like, okay, here we go again.
Yeah, at some point, the back of the baseball card is going to reflect the last few years.
Yeah, at some point, this becomes the actual back of the baseball card.
Yes.
And not the idealized version that we like to think about when we talk about it in the idiom.
Yeah, like I loved my numbers on the scale in the 20s. Sure, when I was in my 20s, I really thought those were great. That's not the back of my baseball card anymore.
I got to tell you, for the back of that baseball card for some of us. I look at the thing that Mike Bryan said. That just really was an interesting kind of reveal, I thought, when he said of his son, he's been snake bitten since May of 18. And you go back and look, and in April of 18 is when he was hit in the head. And then, you know, he's trying to come back, and he's been snake bitten since then.
Hmm.
I think that almost confirms what a lot of people have thought or felt about one of the reasons that Chris Bryant has struggled over the last few years.
I go back to when I had the conversation with Doug Glanville when I was hosting Baseball Night in Chicago with him and Ozzy, and he talked about that. That was something that he brought up. He said, that is something that you cannot discredit how it affects you moving forward. And to a certain extent, I think we've seen that with Giancarlo Stanton as well. Like we've seen that with some of the more noticeable hitters in Major League Baseball. Stanton has had better years since. But was he at his torrid pace that he was before that happened? I can't say that that confidently is the case. I think it does affect players, and I don't blame them, frankly.
I don't want to dismiss it either, and I think it did stand out when you got the father of the player who invokes that time frame, and so it kind of. But I also wonder if it's a matter of convenience too, because you look at the back of Chris Bryant's baseball card. 2019 wasn't so bad. I mean, it wasn't. He hit 31 homers and didn't drive in the runs, but that's not always his fault. But 2019 wasn't terrible. 2020 fell off a cliff, and I just wonder, has he been the MVP guy since that point? No, but it's not as if there isn't a level of competence there that he has been. He's reached too inconsistently. So there is a level. I don't know what to believe, but it did stand out when you got somebody that close to the situation that identifies a time frame that everybody in Chicago has been talking about.
And I've been really thinking also just about the global trends in Major League Baseball, and maybe the Cubs just at some point fell into what Theo Epstein referred to as a winner's trap. and didn't really understand how quickly the game was going to change as far as where the pitches live now and the swings of these guys. When they came up, when they were scouted, when they were drafted, when they were developed, pitchers were throwing hard and low. And there was a lot of swings against sinkers and a lot of stuff, you know, golfing the ball with these, with a swing path that was for then. Baseball flipped a switch. And the evolution was driven by the cameras. The evolution was driven by technology. And it happened so fast, I think a lot of their model got left behind. And I think the fact that they won when they did and it reinforced all of their methods, they were still drafting and developing and maybe not realizing the value of contact bats, the value of guys who could hit velocity up in the zone, and how something like 20% of all MLB pitches this year are 95+. Think about that. 25% of all pitches thrown in the league are 95+. And I think the Cubs are still fighting back from behind on some of that.
Dan, what did you think of the baseballs that may have been doctored being collected and your guy Trevor Bauer being in the middle of that?
Well, he brought it on himself. He's the guy that said the only way to gain spin rate is through substances. He said that publicly. He's the guy that did the experiment. Said, by the way, you might want to check my spin rate here and see what happens. Wink, wink. And used a substance, drove up his spin rate, wiped it off, and then it went right back down. He's asking for this. It's in plain sight. I don't know how you enforce it, but he's asking for it.
But don't you think that there are other pitchers whose baseballs were confiscated as well? We know about his.
Well, I think they've been doctoring baseballs since the beginning of time. I don't know who was the first guy that discovered, oh, hey, look at this. Look what the ball does when you do this. But I think this has gone on all along, and everybody kind of turned a blind eye to it. And now, because of what you're talking about, because of the advancements and all the rest of it, people are understanding, like, okay, we gotta put a little bit of a stop to this. I mean, this is getting out of control.
Isn't the adage, it's always been the gentleman's agreement of affecting grip versus adding torque? Isn't that
they're one and the same, though. It's the same thing. It is that grip that is allowing you to spin the ball more.
But they're saying, like, resin, for example, is weighty enough, heavy enough to where it's going to affect the torque of a ball. Tar. The bullfrog just affects your grip.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, but that's, I mean, but when I've talked to former pitchers about it, this has been
that's the talking point.
The balance.
That's the talking point. And then they'll add in, well, it gives us better control when throwing inside. So the batters are essentially safer. They're out a whole lot more often, but they're safer. And that's the other BS argument there.
Dan, how do you counter people who would suggest that you hear this? Well, you know, hitters, they use things to increase their grip on the bat that are foreign substances. So why should pitchers not be allowed the same sort of latitude?
Mm-hmm. It's different. It doesn't allow them to swing harder or faster. It doesn't,
but doesn't it? Because the grip is better.
It
on
sure
their
does.
Tool?
It absolutely does. Because
well, not
if you don't
to the
have
same a, extent, though. Baseball. I mean, it, when you know what I love about the whole conversation is the idea that the pitcher, you could search him and he doesn't have anything on him, because sometimes it's the third baseman who walks over and he will take the ball from him and he'll doctor it right in front of you.
Well, it's also not the same. It's not the same skullduggery as a spitball, where you used to use it to make your fingers slick so you could throw the equivalent of knuckleballs without having a knuckle grip. I mean, the old spitball is very, very, very different than what they're doing now. To throw a four-seam fastball at 99 miles an hour with the kind of carry that kind of spin. They understand seam-shifted wake. They understand the physics of this thing. It used to be in the old pirate days of somebody throwing a little spitter, you know, Harrison Major League, you know, Bardall, jalapeno in my nose, get the snot going. Like that whole romantic aspect of it. Every once in a while you run into an old guy doing that or Mike Scott scuffing. This is every single pitch changing the efficacy of it.
Well, isn't that also why they want to decrease the time in between pitches? Because of things of this nature, like finding where your grip is on that particular substance and whatnot. Like, that was discussed when Theo talked to Doug Glanville and Jason Stark on The Athletic Show.
Yeah, give them less time to figure it all out.
Right. And that takes away a little bit of their advantage.
I just don't know how you enforce it. I don't know how you police it. I don't know how you enforce it. I don't know what you say is accidental. You do have substances out there that, I mean, there is pine tar in the game. Can you prove when a pitcher put pine tar? I mean,
well, first of all, watch every batter's hat in a game. Like, yep. Let's just start with that. But they can't even enforce actual real calls that happen. Come on.
No, we're getting to that. But it's all good stuff. And I don't know if this is a fool's errand or not, a quixotic effort on Theo Epstein's behalf, but maybe the best thing to do is just hold guys to like the equivalent of their spin rate passport, where they establish a baseline, and you know in the actual tracked evidence, if there is a jump in spin rate, you're just going to tell them, we got you. We know you're speeding.
I have the best guy ever for that. His name is Dan Bernstein. He's the only one who would take this to that degree.
Well, they say they're going to do it.
What have ye today?
A lot of baseball stuff, trying to figure out what we were watching yesterday, and kind of a grim overall baseball day and a boring-ass Masters that was I like to kind of just revel in the Masters. It was so boring. Oh, my God. And we'll talk Bulls because they've been absolute horse crap for the last two games. The Midway.
Wow. What a show we have. Yeah.
Well, they have. They've been garbage. Absolute insulting garbage. It's a team trying to win, and they can't play. Maddie Lee of NBC Sports Chicago covers the Cubs, going to join us at 11. We will talk about the possibilities for the NHL trade deadline. Jay Zawoski is going to give us the latest on what the Hawks might be doing, and all sorts of fun.
All righty. Have a good one. God bless, guys.
Thank you very much.